This is The Urban Political,
the podcast on urban theory, research, and activism.
Welcome to this episode reviewing the 8 years of the new municipalist government in Barcelona. Today, I'm pleased to host this session with long-term activist Elia Gran from the movement party Barcelona en Comú, who has been communications manager during the party's time in government and who is now working with the foundation Sentit Comú. Elia will be speaking with Luzi Gerstenhöfer and Silke van Dijk from the University of Jena in Germany. Silke is professor of political sociology and project leader. Luzi is a doctoral candidate and part of the research team. And my name is Markus Kipp. The conversation will be based on key insights from this sociological research project entitled Public Politics and the Future of the Commons, that is part of the Collaborative Research Center Structural Change of Property, located at the universities of Jena and Erfurt. The project has been conducted over a period of 4 years, involving site visits, interviews with experts in the field, document analysis, and has looked at not only Barcelona, but also Liverpool. But we'll be talking today and focus on Barcelona. Taking a perspective on the tensions between democracy and capitalism in municipalist Barcelona and beyond, the research project has tried to make sense of the structural context with a special interest for the gaps between political ambitions and implemented practices and policies. The research team, Luzi and Silke, will offer key insights for discussion and reflection to engage in a research activist dialogue with Elia. I'll hand over to Silke, who will now introduce the topic and the key interest for this episode.
Yeah, thank you, Markus. I would like to talk a little bit on why Barcelona was so interesting for us that we dedicated several years our research on this case. In times of multiple crises, worldwide, a number of rebel cities have emerged as sites of resistance to austerity policies and neoliberal crisis management. Most prominently, this led to the 15M protests on the squares of many Spanish cities and a subsequent movement that pushed for political change. The charge of corruption against the two-party system of conservatives and social democrats and the economic elite was a key element in all these movements. Moreover, while the austerity measures left elite economic interests largely untouched, heavy cutbacks for working-class citizens were imposed. And it is against this backdrop that new political actors entered the stage with the aim of taking the protests from the streets and squares into the town halls. In nearly all Spain's major cities, local anti-austerity alliances won the municipal elections in 2015, giving rise to a municipal dynamic positioned in opposition to the central governments, and this dynamic is referred to as new municipalism. The key message was that austerity can be challenged and circumvented at the municipal scale and through state-civil society collaborations. The best-known example for this strategy is the local alliance of movements Barcelona en Comú, with Ada Colau becoming mayor of the Catalonian capital from 2015 to 2023. Barcelona en Comú turned Barcelona into the internationally praised flagship of a new urban politics. And as already the name demonstrates, the movement was based on the idea of governing Barcelona in common and as a commons, understood as shared and collectively managed. And Barcelona not only became a lighthouse for municipalist movements around the world, but has also been widely analyzed from an academic perspective. However, the initial excitement for this new form of politics faded over the years. Some have diagnosed the new municipalism as in crisis, and Barcelona en Comú lost the electoral vote in 2023. And although there are really numerous publications on Barcelona and Barcelona en Comú, they mainly focus on programmatic promises from the beginning. And this is true even after 8 years in power. And that's why there is still a lack of analyses that look at the full range of policies which were actually implemented. This also means that too little empirical attention has been paid to hurdles and pitfalls that have prevented the realization of central goals. Talking about impediments for progressive politics, we have to bear in mind that Barcelona en Comú had to govern either as a minority government or in a coalition government with the Social Democratic Party, PSC. At the same time, and somewhat paradoxically, it is precisely the great appeal of Barcelona and its significance as a lighthouse project for social movements around the world that hinders somewhat a critical analysis of the outcomes. Many have warmed themselves, we could say, at this lighthouse as if it were a stove. But this, however, means that failures and problems from which we can learn for future progressive projects have not been relentlessly scrutinized. As Marcus already introduced, this podcast episode seeks to fill this void with the activist and former political advisor within the government, Ilya Gran, whom we have already met during our research in Barcelona. Actually, our interview with Ilya in Barcelona was so rich in impressions and insights that we decided to share her experience and her expertise with more people. Ilya is not only very articulate and knowledgeable, but also, and that's very important for us, a critical and voice that at the same time has remained loyal to the movement party. And so before I talk in length on you, Ilya, the question is now, who are you? And that's a chance to introduce yourself.
Thank you. Well, that's a very broad question. I'm from profession, I'm a journalist, and I appreciate I love the context and everything you said, especially the part of being critical and maintaining myself in the movement. I consider myself not so much loyal to the movement, but I think learning from our mistakes and looking for trying to achieve the upcoming goals is how you grow in politics and in general. So I think I appreciate you mentioning this. So going back to your question of who am I, I'm currently a journalist who's working for the Sentit Comú Foundation, which is the foundation of Barcelona Comú. It's a little bit different than the actual party. It's more of a think tank. But my experience with Barcelona Comú, looking back, comes especially from my 4 years in City Hall working as a communications person for the health department, especially during the pandemic. And previous to that, all the activist organization that I did, not only for the election period, which was crucial, obviously, and when, especially with the International Committee, but also as a day-to-day militant and more of my neighborhood, let's say, and writing articles about Ada Colau and also studying the movement a little from the outside. So that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, thank you. That's really interesting. I'm taking over for here for some questions. And from all the work you did and all the experience you have, looking back at 8 years of municipalist government under Barcelona en Comú, Could you first give us an overview of the most important political priorities of the party, including the most significant shifts that occurred within the 8 years you have been in the local government?
Yeah, it's funny because, the priorities, it's hard to speak about the 8 years as if it were one movement because so many things have changed. One of the biggest problems, actually, looking back, that I would have changed was at the beginning, we didn't have our priorities set too much, too straight. So actually, when you ask this question, and when I think about the priorities, I think about the priorities that we ended up having at the end of our term, let's say, not so much at the beginning. At the beginning, I think we wanted to do a lot at the same time. And it was hard to establish this priority. I also wish someone had told us that you have to start from day one. I feel like we would try to start everything from day one, but you have to really, time flies, especially when you have very ambitious projects. So the priorities, when I think about them now, I mean, one of our more ideological priorities was always responding to a need, right? Like, we came to City Hall to respond to sort of like a skepticism, as Silke mentioned, about from coming from the 15M. We came out not so much thinking that we were born to be in power, but more of there was a need for something to happen. And it sort of materialized into Barcelona en Comú. But so that was, first of all, our first priority was to respond to that, to make sure to meet the needs of the people who were saying that politics is gray and everyone, and you can't believe in politicians. We wanted to change that rhetoric. Another thing is, we wanted to make Barcelona the city for the people of Barcelona. We have seen how Barcelona has also shifted in terms of tourism, in terms of privatization of housing, for example. And we wanted to be able to be an active actor in this, to change this type of city, and make sure that the city was first prioritized its people, and then it prioritized anything else. So that was the second need. And the third priority for us was, we wanted to change the agenda of the city. We wanted to bring in things that people weren't talking about. And we weren't expecting to win. I mean, we desired to win and we put all our effort, but it's very hard for a party that appears months before the elections that no one knows about. There were like four people in a room with a computer and just like deciding what the name was. I mean, we weren't expecting to win, but once we were there and once it happened, then you're like, okay, let's be ambitious and let's change the agenda. So yeah, I think overall those were the bigger like priorities, and then it sort of materialized in different projects that we can talk about. But it was a very ideological shift that we wanted to bring in.
Yeah, thank you. And you just mentioned it materialized in a lot of projects. And just to become a little bit more clear for the listeners, maybe you can give us an example. For example, what was your favorite project you realized or you went for?
I mean, I loved working. One of the brilliant things about working in the health department from a municipalist perspective is that no one really expects anything of you, because we didn't really have the control. You know, we don't have the hospitals. We, in terms of health, there's so much you can do on such a small scale when everything is mostly, you know, state run. And so for me, the fact of making a municipalist dentist and a municipalist, it was a municipalist dentist for low income people. And then we made an affordable psychologist for everybody. And that for me was just amazing, because those are two projects that I think are completely necessary. And I feel like I don't understand how they couldn't have existed before. Like, it's hard for me to understand why this is not something that everyone's doing. And then on a different scale, we did transform the city into a greener place. We made the famous super blocks or superillas, which brought in a lot of green into areas that were basically run by cars. We did projects that were not so noticeable and that were very affordable. And for example, closing down the streets for cars on the weekends where people could walk certain streets, and we just simply cut the traffic. So where there was cars, there are people. And those are, they're very small changes, for example. Not so much the super blocks. The super blocks were obviously very, because they would, I mean, it were very expensive changes, and they implied a long time and a lot of strategizing. But cutting streets for people on the weekends, for example, or even the municipalist psychologist, they're very affordable and easy projects. We did not build anything. We did not need to have big permissions. We did it from, we didn't have to build an office. We just used the offices that we had, and we just put in some times for a psychologist, for example. So I think these are very incredible projects that create a change in people's day-to-day. And again, I don't understand how every city doesn't have these projects. And at the same time, it's being very savvy in how to use your resources. It's that they have great results with such little need of restructuring or making, you know, they're not huge things, but they are huge on the day-to-day basis. And I think those are the projects that call my attention, apart from, you know, building more housing, obviously, which is something that Ada Colau is known for. And let me think, and then creating projects for like children, like public babysitter at some point, international relations. We also opened up to a lot of municipalist other cities through the Fearless Cities Network that we created. So there are a number of things, but for me, the most relevant, the ones that I feel very proud of, are these ones that are just, they're very small things that don't imply so much money or logistics, but change people's day to day in a very significant way.
I was just thinking, because you mentioned housing in the end, because people who are somehow familiar with Barcelona and Barcelona en Comú from left-wing media, they might think of housing and tourism as the big topics of Barcelona en Comú, and they might never have heard about the local dentist. So I'm curious to hear what you think about the reception of the politics, whether or not there are areas where you say Barcelona en Comú was very successful and the city government, but perhaps the spotlight was on other topics and areas.
Right. I mean, Ada Colau is known for her reputation in the PA. She started the the people movements against anti-mortgage. People affected by their mortgages. That's the actual translation. So, I mean, she was one of the founders, and this was a very successful social movement. It took over all the anti-eviction movements at the moment. So when she went into power and she ran, everyone associated her to housing. And we were coming from a moment where housing was an issue. People were, you know, there was the speculation bubble on housing in 2008. People didn't have an income. It was not only about the housing crisis. There was also a mortgage crisis. It was a very complex moment where there had been a certain amount of investment in creating housing, and there wasn't enough money to actually pay for the ending to build these buildings, nor for people to actually live in these houses. There was a lot of people in debt. It was a very, very terrible moment, actually. And Ada and others, but especially her, because she was a spokesperson, was able to put together a movement that confronted the banks face to face and made this sort of the shyness of poverty, the sort of the humbleness and the and yeah, how being poor and not being able to pay your house wasn't so much of a terrible thing, but something to be proud of and try to fight. So she shifted the idea of trying to make people small and not be able to confront the banks, to making sure that people were able to feel empowered. So this, what I'm saying is, this actually brought on to Ada being the housing representative. So when we went into power, the first thing we said was, we're going to build public housing. And that's what we did. We had a very strong housing organization, and everyone talked about housing, and it was a big thing. Obviously now, 8 years later, people are like, oh, you didn't build enough houses you said you would. We also didn't know that building a house is something very complex and takes many years. So a lot of the housing projects that we started are actually being open now, but we're not in government, so that's not really on us anymore. It's more of the current government. But yeah, housing has been on the table. We didn't build as much housing as we wanted to. We did build a lot. We built it differently also, which is very important. We build sustainable housing. We build sustainable buildings. We build co-ops. We build buildings for co-ops for the elderly people. We put care in the center of society also, that you have to take care of people. Aging. We put aging at the center to make sure that we were creating. So it's not only about housing, it's about what type of housing you created. So this was a very developed project. And this is something that we, I think, media-wise, was currently coming up. It was also a lot of expectation, which we obviously didn't meet, because, you know, the media also plays that role where they create some sort of idea that really didn't stick to the truth. Like they sort of built up this idea that we were going to be able to change the city. And obviously in 8 years, you can't really change the whole city. You can do as much as you can. And in terms of little projects, they didn't get much attention. I mean, we were never known for our social changes. And I think those were the most important ones, because housing is very important, obviously. But housing meets, as I don't know, a number of people. And it takes a long time. And these are huge projects. And I feel like our social projects were actually projects that changed many, many lives. Not so many voters. Like most of our people were, you know, on the very poor, especially the ones that went to the dentist. We're talking about people who couldn't meet the minimum wage, and we were offering them free dental care. And these people probably hadn't even heard of Barcelona en Comú most of the time. They were sent to the dentist from the social services. So it wasn't a type of policy where you look for votes. It's more of just trying to implement a change in the city to improve the life of people's life. Same as The Psychologist, I think, was also very notable, especially was after the pandemic, when we could sort of anticipate that there was going to be huge mental health distress. And we created The Psychologist. And at no point were we asking anyone to write down their name and become a member of Barcelona en Comú or vote for us. This was something that was very confidential, and it was promoted through City Hall, obviously, because we were in City Hall, and that's it. But it wasn't this huge policy. And the thing with all these little policies, these social improvements, is that they don't get much feedback. You don't get votes. It's not really sexy. Like the media doesn't, you know, the picture of people without teeth smiling, it's just not as sexy as building this huge building with new houses. So I think in general, everything that has to do with a certain level of poverty is sort of gray. These are gray buildings. They're not beautiful and wonderful. But I do think that we did change a lot of things, and we did not get enough credit for it media wise. I think we tried as much as we can to make sure that they were known. Also, one of the things, looking back now, I see that Spain has created, for example, a lot of these programs that we started in Barcelona have been also duplicated in other countries and in other levels. So that, for me, that's satisfying, that yes, they worked. If they wouldn't work, they, you know, they call us and they ask us, how'd you make this? How'd you make this happen? You know, like the Generalitat, the Catalan government calls us asking about the municipalist dentists and how they can start to develop it. So it's a success, but, you know, we didn't get recognized for it. We never signed off to it, let's say.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you mentioned. We will come to this in a moment. But for now, looking at all these projects and things you have tried, what do you think are the greatest success in this all, and also the greatest failures? And looking at them together, what can you say is the legacy of Bas Luna Onkumu that remains after these 8 years?
Bas Luna Onkumu, for me, just the existence of Bas Luna Onkumu and the fact that we were able to be in government, for me, is one of the most wonderful, awkward situations that I think mark a precedent in current politics. Like, I think we were in the right place at the right moment, and we won. And I think that opened up a space of people who weren't necessarily traditional, like we weren't in politics per se. We were in social movements. We were never in institutional politics. I think we learned so many things through that. But I think our model marks so much precedent of future models. Like if you travel and you mention the Bas Luna Onkumu project, people have heard about this project. And I don't think it was because we did exceptional things, but I think it was, we were just very lucky to be in the right place, the right time with the right people, and just have a really strong project. And also listening to the people, I think it was very important to be able to put out something that responded to people's demands. I don't think we would have won if we hadn't really been able to be attuned to what was happening in society. So I think for me, just the existence of Bas Luna Onkumu, even if we win, if we don't win, even if we disappear tomorrow, I think it's very important historically, because it shows that people do have power and things can change. I think one of the biggest triumphs is that we were able to change the agenda, and we were able to change the way people word things is different now. The way the housing movement is happening now, there's a precedent, which was we went into power. And the housing movement that's currently happening now in Spain, for example, it's definitely different than what it was before. And I don't think it's going to be another Ada Colau who's going to appear from there and going to studio. Like, I don't think it's going to be the exact same repetition. But something will happen. And that happening has to do with the fact that we were empowered at some point. And housing was, like, one of the first things on the agenda, thanks to Ada Colau. So for me, yeah, I think the existence, I think the fact that we were able to, at some point, bring a lot of information from the social movements to City Hall, I think that plays also as something negative, because I think we lost that contact at some point. 8 years in City Hall, it's very hard to connect on all levels constantly. And policy-wise, it was... We took a lot of good people from the social movements into City Hall, hoping that this would also bridge contacts between the movements and City Hall. But it's not possible. It's very hard to work on an organization level and on a political institution level. So I would say that's also something that is good and bad, because I think it was really good that we had these people, and I think that helped us keep us oriented in what the needs were. But I think towards the end, we realized that we had done a little bit of the social movements aren't as strong as they used to be, and part of that is because we took so many people. So. I mean, I think in actual, like, physical things that have changed, I think there's a lot of things that still remain in Bas Luna Onkumu. We have the super blocks that still remain. Obviously, the buildings still remain. the municipal dentist now. The city government, I mean, the Catalan government wants to make it official and try to offer this dentist service to a broader audience, not only people who have no resources. We have more public schools and private schools in the city. And then part of us was, we were able to transform some of the schools from private to public. And the actual tables, meeting tables, where people meet in City Hall, you have activists now sitting at these tables. Like it's, and that is something that we were, when we got to City Hall, that didn't happen. You would meet with, you know, Blackstone or whoever was running the building and then the politician, but you wouldn't have someone who was actually an activist. I mean, obviously it did happen at some other points, but it wasn't something that was a given. This voice was not represented. And I feel like we brought in that voice. And now it's a voice that I think is actually, it's necessary. And then you'll see most of the interviews or whatever they say from City Hall, any information about housing, they mention, well, and the activists and the connection with activists. So I think this changed. The people who are at the negotiating table have changed. And I think that's part of our legacy. I think we did that. Obviously, someone had started it before us. And, you know, I think things happen in a progressive way. But I think we made it one of our priorities. I think another of our legacies is we captivated a certain level of people who didn't know how to vote. Like there was people who didn't want to vote the current left parties because they were very traditional, maybe very, very linked to Catalan customs and very independence oriented. And obviously the right wing, well, you know, the right wing is the right wing. And we offered a space of, as we said, common people, which is our name. And I don't think it was linked so ideological to this identity of Catalonia or very traditional type of politics. It's a different type of politics. You don't sign up to our party. You don't pay a fee and become a member. You attend assemblies. We worked very hard to make sure that our neighborhoods were strong voices that were able to tell us what they needed, and they were satellites to our politics. And I think that's one of our most important legacies also, is how we organize. I think we've created new things in spaces that were hard to create. That one wouldn't imagine of what it would be like to have a new party. Sometimes it's hard to think about something new when you can't even really situate it. And so this creation, this creativity, this bravery, right? We I remember when we talked in the interview, we talked about being brave, what it means to be brave. I think we were very brave at the beginning. We were very ambitious, and I think that's very important. I think that's more important than the actual physical things that we did in the city. I think it's our existence as a party has made history, and things in the city will change. You know, the dentist will live or die, or, you know, they will change the super blocks because the next government can change it. But I think our existence has helped, and a lot of people become political, and has also empowered a lot of people who might not have had a say before we existed.
Actually, there's one important policy field I think you haven't mentioned yet, and that's economic policies. I'm actually asking because we had some interviews who stressed so that there was a kind of division of work, so to say, so that the Socialist Party took the responsibility for economic policies and Barcelona and Comú more for the softer and social topics. But nevertheless, there were huge efforts to foster the social and solidarity economy. And I'm just curious to hear whether or not you think there is a legacy too, and what happened in this policy field and with what are the outcomes.
Right. When we came into City Hall, we gave economics to the socialist government. I feel like that's something also that a lot of people sort of tell us that we didn't do right, because we didn't have that expertise. We also didn't, everything that had to do with policing was also given to the socialists, right? So everything that we found that wasn't our expertise, we sort of gave it to them. But obviously those are huge topics that, you know, at the end of the day are very important. And in terms of economics, we worked we worked the economy in a different way. We started talking about co-ops and especially like food sobriety, well, food justice. So I think those were two huge points where we started working in terms of changing the economy of the city to a more donut model that they say. But I think also economically, we were able to readjust certain things of priorities. For example, we were talking about creating a municipalist like a crematory for when people died. We also created a municipalist energy company. So in terms of the city's economy, not only were we trying to change the model, not so much from the economic perspective per se exclusively, because the socialists had that power, but we were trying to shift in the consumption of certain things and trying to take it away from like actually private companies. I think that was one of our most we knew that if we wanted to guarantee a certain economic level, make sure that there wasn't any more bubbles, like the housing bubble that had been 2008, we had to municipalize the basic services. So that was one of our objectives, to make that municipalist. And obviously the co-ops was a way to connect with the social movements and be able to organize inside the social movements. Don't know if that really answered your question, though.
Yes. And it also brings us to the topic of remunicipalization of social services, but also of the water management and water services. And in our research, we saw this was kind of a flagship project in the beginning of Barcelona en Comú when you entered the government. And we also did some research on it, and I'll give a short introduction for the listeners. And so during the social crisis following the 2008 financial crash, there was a strong alliance of social movements, which called the deprivatization of water supply and to counter the rising water prices. And when you, with Barcelona en Comú, took over the city government in 2015, you put intense efforts to transfer the water service to municipal administration and open them up to society through participatory processes. Because until then, the supply in Barcelona and the region had been managed by a public-private company, which was dominated by a transnational water corporation, ACBA, holding more than 70% of the shares. So trying to municipalize the water services, you faced strong resistance from the media, other political parties, and especially from this private company, ACBA. And the company fought against municipalization through media campaigns and numerous lawsuits, including legal actions against Ada Colau. And ultimately, after years of conflict, this project was put on hold in 2019 following a court ruling. And for us, interesting to hear, what do you think that this kind of failure of this big project meant for your way of doing politics, doing brave politics, and but also for the municipalization? Not the municipalization, politics and mobilization.
Yeah, that was they filed 20 lawsuits against us from Agbar for trying to municipalize water, which all of them got overturned because they were so at the end of the day. It's a shame because everyone, it comes out in the news when they take you to trial. You know, Agbar is taking Ada Colau to trial against her municipalization water project. But it didn't really come out in the news when the result came out that these were lawsuits that had no, that were, that hadn't, they didn't have any weight. You know, they were accusations that that didn't win. So that's a shame, because you look back and everyone remembers the highlights of Ada being taken to court, but no one remembers the actual sentence that came out. And she was innocent on all counts of all the 20 court cases. So it was a failure because we didn't do it in the end. But for me, I think it's one of the biggest examples of David against Goliath sort of metaphor. We fought, we thought, we think to this day that basic services like the funeral home, like public water, are things that should be public, should be municipalist run. I mean, it's not, we don't only say in Tarrasta also there's an observatory of water. Like, this is not us coming for the first time. This is something that we know is necessary for people to be actually live in a city, and for, and also a way to protect these natural resources without having private companies be the ones to sort of establish the price. So we tried. We developed a whole department, which was called, when we came into City Hall, it was called like ecology, and we turned it into climate emergency. That was the name, Emergencia Climática, because we thought that ecology was just too soft. So we thought that the correct term was that we're living in a climate emergency. And one of the ways to deal with these type of things is municipalizing the resources and seeing how we can optimize not only the resources, but also make sure that no one is over benefiting from these resources. Let's say if you put it in a municipal level, obviously the price will go down, and obviously we'll be able to choose who our sources are from where we're getting this water. But yeah, but they took us to trial. They won time. I think if we had been elected again, we would have been able to continue some of these projects, like the funeral home and the municipalization of water. We were able to create Barcelona Energy, which is actually an electric municipalist service that has many users, and it competes against big companies like Endesa and Olaluz, which are current electric company. So we were able to do that. That's a success story. But yeah, the fact of the private or the public-private companies taking us to trial was a huge stick in the wheels to be able to develop these companies, because they took time from our end. They it's the same as the dentist. We were taken to trial by the school of dentists, let's say, or the orthodontics collective or school, and basically what that did was they won a lot of times, to the point that we weren't able to finish all our projects in the 8 years because we were still on trial, and there's still right now sentences are coming out saying that Ada is innocent, but it doesn't really matter anymore. The point is, yes, they won. We weren't able to finish our projects. From a social movement perspective, I don't think we have to give up. I think social movements put the idea on the table of municipalizing resources. And from the institution, our idea was to try to materialize that and make it real. But now that we're back to the social movements, I think we can't give up on this idea. And we just have to fight it from a different perspective. But I think it's not, you can't fight everything on the same level. And I think we tried very hard to change a lot of things at the same level. And obviously 8 years is just not enough.
That's a good point to continue, because I think before we can talk about what we can learn out of 8 years in power, it would be great to dig a little bit deeper. What were the hurdles, pitfalls, impediments to succeed with projects? We just learned about the water case, and you also mentioned that many of the projects take a longer time than 2 terms. But talking about impediments, so actually Barcelona en Comú did not lose the elections, but they because you didn't really lose many votes, but you were in the second place. And so the question is, especially against the background that Barcelona en Comú claims to activate and cooperate with the ordinary people. So the question is, why? What do you think? Why did the movement not succeed in convincing the majority that this is the movement, that this is the political force of the ordinary people? And so there were many comments like pointing at the fact that Barcelona en Comú especially lost voters in the working class communities. And I'm very curious to hear what you think, because you rightly stressed that the city government did so much for vulnerable people, especially in healthcare, but also in other in social assistance and so on. Why didn't this turn out into votes in the poorer parts of the city?
Well, I'm glad you asked this question, because I think it helps look back on what's happened during these 8 years and sort of why did we lose, especially in the working class neighborhoods, which were technically our objective, let's say, our key audience, right? I mean, overall, I think all governments had a struggle having a pandemic in the middle. Also, that was on the second term. On the first term, we had a huge uprising of the Catalan independence on the 1st of October. So I think those two moments also sort of shifted our voters, because people came in through the pandemic and one with like certain political ideas, and I think they came out with other type of political ideas. I think it shifted a lot of where people stood on certain things. So that definitely changed. And also the Catalan nationalist movement on the 1st of October also put us in a situation that it was hard. The city was, you know, our voters were divided into black and white, and it was, and the grays were very hard to conquer. And we didn't, we were in favor of democracy, but not so much in favor of the Catalan independence. So that didn't play in our favor. But beyond that, going back to the actual votes of why we lost in the working class, I mean, we realized that there was a lot of people in the first 4 years who told us, you don't have a city model. You don't have a model of the city. You don't know what it is. You know, we got criticized a lot for being naive, for not being an expert in politics. A lot of the people in government were activists. And, you know, you could actually differentiate us just by how we dressed, you know, like we didn't fit in as normal as the standard politicians, and they would tell us that we didn't have a city model. It was true. Like, I think there was a part of us that didn't really project. It was hard to project such a big thing, especially having been given economy and to the socialists. So it was hard for us to imagine. Say, so we made a big effort to respond to that. How do we imagine the city? How, and one of the biggest things that we could think of that we wanted to do was make the city greener. We want to make the city greener. And the less greener areas were especially in the center, in the center of the city, and more of like where, if you look at Barcelona, it's like a square. There's like squares, and we wanted to build green. But so we had this big plan, and we liked this idea, and we decided to bet on this idea, to make it our icon, our, you know, sort of our symbol. What will we be remembered for? And we want to make the city greener, greener space, put people where the cars are. So this was a wonderful idea, and I think it definitely improves a lot of people. But these were squares in the center of the city. So the working class don't live so much in the center of the city. They're people who live more in the suburbs, on the outskirts. And their first priority was not having a greener space. Like, I think when we think about our working class, especially in Barcelona, we have to think about these social issues, first of all, guarantee health, guarantee, well, access to health, guarantee access to education, guarantee access to transport, which we did do. But obviously, we decided that the super blocks was going to be our thing. It was going to be our icon. I think when we decided to do that, and we decided we started to appeal to a different type of voter. All of a sudden, we became much more middle-class type of voter who was actually seeing the change that we were doing in their neighborhood. And the working class did not see this. They don't, I mean, I feel like a lot of people who voted for us don't care if we made a super block or didn't make a super block. Like, it's not, for them, it's not relevant. And the things that we did do in the more working-class neighborhoods were things that I feel people also assume that we had to do, like, oh, of course, you have to do this. You have to help people with the dentist or mental health. And I don't think people understood how exceptional these measures were. I think a lot of people assume that we just had to do it because it was a need. And everything that comes from the social services is assumed that the government will do. But I think in our case, we not only prioritized it, but we reimagined it and we gave them services that didn't exist. Nevertheless, as a political strategy, to have your voters be working class, people who are, there's a strong point of immigration, maybe to undocumented folks, people who are just skeptical in general of politics, they're not people who go out and vote. It's very hard to mobilize these types of areas, of these types of neighborhoods, for them to always go vote. They're strong movements and who are also very critical because also their needs are very, have very clear needs and also very basic needs, needs that have to be met. It's not this idea of let's build a theater. It's more of like, how do I work on my day to day and how am I able to live when my mother is sick and I have two kids and I'm not making enough money? Like, these are the situations we're talking about. And this public doesn't care about super blocks. I don't know if they have time or if they want to vote or if they even believe in politics. And at the same time, these are the people who you want to help if you're in City Hall. So it was never our best bet to, you know, it was a hard bet to always work for working class people. But also, not only that, but we shifted and we also decided that we wanted to be recognized as the super block people. And that when we decided that, I felt like our whole organization changed. And all of a sudden, City Hall was one thing and Barcelona en Comú was another. And City Hall was betting on super blocks and they were negotiating with, you know, with the people who were building these super blocks and looking at, you know, with architects and urbanists. And then the organization, Barcelona en Comú, was saying like, well, why, you know, we're becoming something that we don't even see. We don't see super blocks. We don't walk these streets. We don't, you know, we don't go up to the higher points of the city to sit on a bench in a greener area. So I think a small disconnection happened. And during the last years of us in power, I think that gap sort of was bigger and bigger. And also the gap with the connection we had with social movements. Because these social movements, like, they were in favor of ecology and they were in favor of making the city greener. It wasn't necessarily super blocks. So some people were okay with it, but it wasn't a specific demand from the social movements. It was more of a need that we had as people in power to brand our party. And I don't think that went through very well. I don't know if we wouldn't have done it, what would have happened, because we had to do something. But it definitely had very severe consequences that to this day, I think we're still trying to, you know, handle or deal with.
Yeah, I would like to take up this point, like the relationship between the movement and those in City Hall. because Barcelona en Comú started as a movement party, and you already mentioned that the movement was somehow weakened by the success of the movement party, because some people moved into City Hall. But at the same time, and that's a point we discussed a lot, there were not so many people in City Hall. So a movement that dies because people are in the government was a smaller movement, so to speak. So we were wondering why the movement dynamic faded away. And I'm curious to hear more whether or not this is only, you know, that that the gap between movement and party was growing, or if it goes even further to say the movement dynamic faded. So the question is, did this project assumed too much movement, ongoing movement power, because there were these huge dynamics in the movement of the squares? But is it really realistic to have this movement power ongoing for several years? And what should be the conditions to enable people to be active in their neighborhoods? Because we heard from neighborhood meetings where there were 200 in the beginning and 8 people in the end. And we heard from meetings at Canmajor where there were more academics to do research on it than activists being there. So I'm curious to hear what you think about these dwindling movement power.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, the social movements will always outlive any political party or any political term. So I think the social movements are where people get politicized, where people start to get in context, people start to organize, people start to identify needs and struggles. And these are the social movements are the ones to push people inside City Hall to make changes. Like, it's, for me, it's, as an activist, I think, you know, any type of assembly or men, you know, public manifestation are very important, because these are the ones that actually shift the power inside. So I think it was necessary for us to come from social movements, but the moment that we came, the social movements had to readjust to not only having other people, you know, because we took the spokesperson, we took Ada Colau, which was Mick's main spokesperson. We also took people from the ecologist movement who were very well prepared and recognized and were doing very active jobs in social movements. So it wasn't only that the movement had to adapt with readjusting inside them, but also their role is to push people in City Hall. And also when we got into City Hall, I feel like we had to both readapt to what that means as a relationship. Like, you can push us, you know, but then it's weird because then we all have drinks together after work. So it's like we all of a sudden the people inside City Hall stopped being these men with, you know, these white men with a tie, and it was us. So they would push us, but at the same time, there was a certain level of communication that wasn't normal, because so also social movements had to, and we also had to adapt to that. Like, okay, please push us, but also there are challenges inside the City Hall that we didn't know about that we're trying to adjust, so don't push us too much. So it's this whole dance that you have to do of like, okay, we're friends, but now we're sort of friends. Like, sometimes I won't say hi to you on the street type of thing, you know, like it was slightly weird. So I think social movements definitely had to readapt not only to their internal organization, but to their objectives in terms of how they related to the institutional politics. Also, coming from a wider spectrum of where the left started to conquer not only city halls, but they also, you know, they took over certain levels of more, a bigger government in Madrid, for example. There was more representation. We had Podemos. There was an actual moment where a lot of the people who were people that you would see on the streets were actually working in these bigger institutions. So that was something we had, that social movements had to adapt to, and also adapt to the failures that might have come. You know, there were high expectations that we would change the world, and we didn't. We changed part of it, but not the whole thing. And I think social movements have also have very high expectations, and that's how it should be. But from inside, you can't deal with case to case. Like, you would have people being like, oh, I need you to deal with this situation, with this person. I need you to help this person. And you'd say, well, I can't help this person because there's so much overwhelming noise and the things that have to be done and so much bureaucracy that we weren't aware of. And so social movements would say, well, we gave you people, we gave you the power to make a change. And I'm presenting you with a situation, solve it. And then you'd be like, well, to solve it, I need you to go through these three offices and do this bureaucracy. And at some point I can talk to you. And I said, well, I'm starting to regret having put you in power if this is what it's going to look like. Mm. So that started to happen on different levels. Although we did make an effort to try to take care of this relationship. Obviously, it was a priority for us to maintain a good relationship with social movements. But it was hard. It was hard. And at the beginning, Ada would have huge assemblies of people in the squares, you know, and she would be on the streets every week or every 2 weeks. She would hold like a general assembly in the streets where everyone, all the neighbors could come, and everyone would tell, like, that was beautiful. And it's actually democracy as a, you know, like the essence of democracy as I imagine it. But then things happen, and then Ada became less and less available because things started to get complicated, and she became an international representative of City Hall for other things. So more and more you have to delegate to take care of like the actual satellites of territory of your territory assemblies to other people, and all of a sudden the representation is not so big because, well, to make things happen from City Hall, there's a lot of paperwork that has to be done. So it's a shame, and I think we lost touch a little bit with territories. We couldn't attend them with as much attention as we would like, and so that's what we're doing now. Like now is when we have time.
Yeah, and my question was whether or not this process was fueled from both sides. Now you mentioned that Ada Colau became less accessible or less available, but I was also wondering whether or not people became less available to visit a huge neighborhoods meeting year by year because they have to manage their everyday life. So that's a question in how far movement politics have to have new politics on time issues of work and leisure politics. So who is able to contribute to movements on a daily scale? And I think many people with small children, elderly, are not. So that would be, the question, how far you discuss this.
Right.
Not only a problem of less supply from the City Hall, but also of less demand from the movement side.
Well, I think the movement cycle shifted while we were in City Hall. So, for example, there was new housing movements that appeared that we were less connected to. So that definitely happened. And then people started to organize in different movements that that were created while we were in City Hall. I think definitely we came from the 15M, which was a very empowering period, and people were very active. And as, you know, as politics is a wave, the left also grew, you know, Podemos appeared, we appeared, and we're now living for, we've been in this for quite some while. There's a certain skepticism, political skepticism. So it's not, I agree that people's availability with children and the new generations, but the new generations behind us, I feel are working in a different way than what we were working. Like the type of social movements that we conceived are transforming to something else. People maybe don't meet in person, they meet online. And the objectives are also shifting slightly, and people are maybe more concerned about their private life instead of so much of a collective think tank. So there has been a shift, definitely. And I think in terms of when we were in office, I think social movements we opened up a lot of spaces for social movements, like physical spaces. We were very attentive to make sure that they were given the care that we could afford or we could access. And I think other governments weren't so well. It wasn't so much of a priority for them. So we made sure that there were spaces and there was a way of organizing and contact with them and make sure that we were fueling the social movements. But again, the moment you get into City Hall, things did shift from the outside. And I think the social movements have also transformed in a way that it's hard for me to explain because I feel like this is like the new generation of activism, which I'm like not really connecting to in terms of how they organize and what is so much their ambition. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely. And before we come to the learnings, I think it would be great to wrap up the review on 8 years in power, because you talked about all the lawsuits and there was a lot of fight back against the progressive city government. And I think these dynamics are documented very well also, which brought the socialist plate because they made it much more difficult for you to implement Barcelona and Comú politics in the city hall. But for us and for the learning, it's also very interesting to hear, what do you think were the biggest mistakes your movement party, Barcelona and Comú, did in government? When you had the chance to do it again, you already said you have to know what you do on day one and not to do everything on that day one. So what would you say would be the most important mistakes not to be done a second time?
I think we didn't have it easy media-wise. So media-wise, that took up a lot of time also. The fact of not having a space for our actions to have how do you say, an altavoz, like an echo. Let me see, altavoz, small translation, let me see. A loud voice, okay. Well, for them not to have like an open, loud voice. And that was very hard because we made a lot of efforts to make sure that people knew what we were doing, and it feels like it was just never enough. Like we never made headlines, and that was very hard because technically, if you know, like we could talk about ourselves, but we needed the papers to talk about our media. So that was a challenge that we weren't anticipating. I think talking about anticipation, I think we should have anticipated much more. Like we, obviously you can't anticipate a pandemic, but we did anticipate a mental health crisis. And with that anticipation, we were the first to open up a suicide hotline, the public psychologist, and a number of services for families who are going through this mental distress that I think we should have anticipated more. We should have worked with more anticipation. I feel like a lot of the things we did, we had to change things that were already being done in City Hall, which is what happens when you just arrive and you have such different ideology than the person in front of you. There's a lot of things that you have to undo and redo. And I think that took up a lot of time. That took up a lot of time, and that didn't allow us to anticipate so much and plan ahead. Because a lot of the things we were doing was opening up spaces, literally, and like opening like the terrace in City Hall up on the very top on the rooftop. We opened the rooftop for everyone in City Hall, and it used to be closed down only to the workers. So there was a lot of that. I think mistakes that we made, we didn't take care of our organization. I think we should have took more care of our organization, and we should have organized differently. Probably a lot of the people that were in City Hall were one of the most proactive people that we had. And I feel like we should have maybe been able to find a way to compensate on the same level, have the same level of availability and people working from an organizing level to a city hall level. So I think anticipation would have helped. I think there were a lot of challenges that were very hard for us to beat. And there's a lot of things that we had to undo, to redo. It's not that we didn't take care. I just think we didn't realize until it's actually happening, you don't realize what went wrong. And now we look back and said, well, the organization felt abandoned at some point. And if you abandon your organization, you're basically abandoning your DNA, right? Like this is where the ideas come from. And these are your people. These are your voters. These are people who support you on a day-to-day basis. So that was another thing that we should have done. And I think also politically, there's some criticism about having Adekola run once, twice, or three times. We never really thought about or were able to materialize a different candidate. And I think Adekola was a brilliant politician and person, but at the same time, I think she took a lot of space that was maybe for the organization. People know Adekola better than Barcelona Comú. And so that means that the moment that her reputation went one way or the other, so did all our policies. So that was also very delicate because being such a one person sort of representation was a lot of pressure on her. And it was also, it was like we all owned her identity. It was strange because her social media became the place where we posted what we did, because the papers wouldn't talk about us. But at the same time, the social media is hers. And now, for example, it's a big thing, right? Like Adekola's email address is hers. It's not ours. But at the same time, it's sort of always been ours because, that's where people would write to, not Barcelona Comú, but they would write to Adekola. So that's something that maybe we should have tried to cultivate a different person to also maybe take into power if Ada ever wanted to retire. Yeah.
You also mentioned that having lost the election is now an opportunity for the party to reflect and to learn on all the things you said. And you also mentioned that at the moment you're in an ongoing process which is called Rethinking Barcelona, Repensem Barcelona, I think you have to say it in Catalan. maybe you can tell us a little bit about it and how far you have come with this process and about what topic you're speaking there.
The process is huge. Yeah, you can say in Catalan. We also accept a few. Everyone can come to these assemblies. The idea is to rethink Barcelona, so that's also includes our international community. I'm saying that because in some of the sessions I've been to, it's funny because I see people for the first time. I've never met people who, I met this German lady the other day, which it was just funny because she doesn't speak much Catalan or Spanish, but she somehow decided to come and rethink Barcelona. And I think that's beautiful that people who are just starting to live in the city can come and tell us what their perspective is. So right now we're at a point where we don't have the pressure we used to have. Like, we're not on the spotlight anymore. We are not the mayor of Barcelona. It's not all our fault anymore. Before it used to rain and it was our fault. And before, if there was traffic, it was our fault. And if the price of bread went up, it was also our fault. So we're not there anymore. I feel like there's less emergency calls at night, and this is good because this gives us a little bit of space to not only rethink Barcelona, but to rethink our organization a little bit. And I think it's necessary. It's like if we're, if you're not playing on the field, but you're sort of sitting on the sidelines waiting for your turn. So we still have a lot of projects and we're still in different aspects were in power. We still, in City Hall, we might not be mayors, but we still are in the opposition. And on a Barcelona area level, we're also ruling in different, you know, in ecology and health department. And we keep our, we're still nurturing the relationships that we made in City Hall. Like we still have meetings with people from the Catalan government about projects that we started. So a lot of the things we're making an effort to continue to build because we think that, you know, things don't start or end at a certain point. Like you don't leave City Hall and just sort of, you know, erased your agenda. There's conversations that are ongoing. There's personal relationships. So we're doing a lot of that. And we're also doing a lot of rethinking about the organization. And this is where Rethink Barcelona comes in. So Rethink Barcelona is a process that we've never done before in our 8 years. But we think it's important to reestablish our priorities and reestablish where we're at and sort of stop and think. So this process goes all the way from what's the relationship of the neighborhood assemblies to the actual party, to the relationship between citizens and the actual city. And it's basically many, many assemblies at different levels, from each neighborhood having assemblies. And in these assemblies, we sit down and we ask them, for example, 2 or 3 questions, and we listen. It's a listening process, an active listening process. It's not so much a debating process at this point. It's just more of a listening. We're recollecting ideas. So we're putting out questions and we're taking notes. We take notes and we, you know, we're posting this online in this platform that's called Decidim, and we're trying to put together everything we're listening to and organize all this information from the bottom up, starting from the neighborhoods to the people who are working in Barcelona en Comú, to the activists who are not related to the neighborhoods but are related to different like topic organizations that we work with, to social movements that have started with us, all the levels. We're asking them questions. We're asking them the same questions, basically, about what's the relationship with the organization, what's the relationship with the city, how's the relationship between themselves, like learning. Because I feel like also we spent a lot of time in City Hall and maybe we weren't listening enough, right? So we're going back to our roots. In this process, that's actually going to last until July, where we're having a big congress, where we're putting out the main ideas. But the next step will be sort of contrasting these ideas and opening spaces of debate. Like starting to see what ideas are the ones that stick and what ideas are the ones that that we want to pursue. And this is all done internally. We have asked for some external representation, for example, from, you know, references, intellectual and philosophical people who are references in our community. And we've asked for their feedback. So we're trying to make this as collective as possible, and it's as open as possible. It's open to everyone. But it is a time where we are taking the time to be present and listen. And it sounds very hippie-ish, but that's what we, because moving forward, we did lose. We won and we lost. And I think we mentioned this when we're doing the actual interviews in Barcelona. Losing after having only won, because we were born and we won, and then now having lost, you come from a different space. Like we were very privileged to be able to come from a space of power. And I think now we have to rethink what we want to do and what our ambitions are, because, you know, the political space has changed, the political spectrum of the world. We have Donald Trump, we have, you know, let's see how it goes in Germany, but it's not looking very well. We also have power in Mexico, like in a Spanish level, you have the right wing, which is it's sort of getting to, especially the young people. So we have new challenges to face, and we have to decide what until what point we can be as helpful as we were at the beginning. So, and if Ada Colau wants to, you know, run for in 2027, There's a number of questions that are very important that we answer now, and we have to do this process well to make sure we come out of this with a few clear ideas, which will mark the next 4 or 8 years of our life. So, yeah, I think there's still the same amount or even more work to be done as we had in City Hall, because maybe we don't have specific projects that we have to work on, but it's more of an internal work, which is also very exhausting and very delicate and takes up a lot of time and space and emotionally. It's also very emotional. So the good thing is we have our own expectations now. It's not so much that we have to respond to the whole city. We have to respond to ourselves. So in that sense, we're making sure to take care of ourselves and respond to our needs, not so much the city as per se, on such a great level, let's say.
So I think coming to the end, actually, it was already very personal what you said, but of course that it's a different perspective speaking on the movement and speaking about you as an activist. So what is your own personal summary after 8 years and in the process of reorganizing now? What is your summary?
I mean, I think what I lived 8 years in City Hall, in the health department, in during the pandemic with Gemma Tarafa, I think for me that was I feel very privileged to have lived that moment, because as a journalist, I come from a space of observation and sort of studying things from the outside and storytelling and being able to be an active player in such an important historical moment, and also being with a party that you're so aligned to in terms of the social values and what the objectives are. I think I can't, like, tears come into my eyes when I think about it. I think it was amazing. It was definitely one of the places where I've learned so many skills. And now we're in a different point. And it's more of a struggle to not only stay in the party, because a lot of things have changed, a lot of people have left. We'll have to see how this process goes. We'll have to see the outcome of Rabin's in Barcelona, but it's now is when you really see who can stick through the times that aren't so shiny. Like, we don't get invited to great events, and we don't get to do things. So we don't get to have an idea and materialize it. Now we have to sort of, do our own thing in a more internal way, and it's not as sexy, let's say. But I think it's a different type of learning process. And personally, I'm appreciating the moment I'm at now, because it's really giving me time to read and think and also personally see how I stand on everything that happened, and how committed I am to the future of the party. I'm in the foundation, which gives me a lot of space to connect with people from outside the party and organize events and talk to the international committee and a number of people that are not necessarily linked to Barcelona Comú, and that really helps me get some insights of the importance of who we are and the struggle that we sort of led. So I'm very happy, but it's definitely a different way of working and a different emotion from those 8 years to where we are now. I don't think it's hard to measure them in terms of better or worse. It's more of, it's definitely more personal growth. It's not so much looking outward. It's more looking inward.
Thank you so much, Elia, for this honest and insightful conversation. And thank you, Luzi and Silke.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And it's been great. I think at the end, yeah, I really feel like we could talk for hours.
Thanks to you for listening.
For more information, visit our website, urbanpolitical.podigees.io.